Before we begin, just a quick note. If this conversation about alcohol, identity, and desire resonates, my new book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is out now. And if you want to go deeper, slowly, thoughtfully, and in ways that genuinely nourish you, I've opened the Thirsty For More Mindset Lab on Substack. You'll find links to both in the show notes. Right. Let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink, the podcast for anyone questioning their relationship with alcohol or simply wondering what more life might hold. I'm Anna Donaghy, alcohol mindset coach, author, and former strategist. And each episode is going to blend lived experience, psychological insight, and powerful tools to help you understand your habits and gently rethink your drinking in a way that throws open oodles of possibilities. So whether you're trying to quit, cut down, or you're just plain curious, then you are in the right place. Let's rethink things together and explore what you're really thirsty for. Hello, and welcome back to a solo episode of The Big Drink Rethink. Now, listen, there are phrases that we use all the time. Things like, that's just who I am. That's just how I am. I've always been like this. I'm just not someone who can X, Y, Z, okay? Now, I've been thinking about just how bloody powerful and how bloody limiting these sentences can be. Because there's something quietly radical that I want to share with you, okay? We are not our past, not neurologically, not psychologically, not anthropologically, there's a big word, and yet we often live as though we are. Now today I want to explore that tension, but let's just pause for a moment. We are not our past. Just let that idea land. You're not the fixed version of yourself that your memory presents. You are not the sum of your worst year. You're not the coping strategy that you learned when you were 17 or the identity that you built at 25. Now take a breath. Because if that's true, and it is, by the way, then something quietly extraordinary is also true. It means there is space. Space between who you were and who you are. Space between what happened and what it now means. Space between an old belief and a new choice. And that space is possibility. Now it can feel destabilizing at first because the past gives us a story, right? It tells us who we are. It makes the world feel coherent, but it can also confine us. So just notice what happens in your body when you consider this. What if I'm not bound to that earlier version of myself? For some people, there is relief. For others, there's resistance. For most, there's a sort of a flicker of hope. Because if you're not your past, then you're not sentenced to repeat it. You're not required to defend it. You're not obligated to perform it. You're not trapped by it. The fact that we are not the same person that we were when we were 10, 30, 40 years ago makes sense. And yet we may still be carrying the beliefs and identities and coping strategies that were formed then. And the work, oh, the hugely beneficial work is noticing what we're carrying. Now, at risk of sounding a bit wanky, there is a thought that philosophers have debated for centuries, and that is that the self is not fixed. Now, one such philosopher, a chap whose name I'm going to mispronounce, it's Heraclitus or Heraclitus, Heraclitus. Let's go with Heraclitus. Well, anyway, nice chap, I'm sure. He had this idea that you cannot step in to the same river twice, by which he meant by the time you step back in, the water's moved on. It's still called the river. It still looks like the river, but it isn't the same water. And I love that because Obviously, him being a philosopher and all, Heraclitus wasn't talking about rivers. He was talking about us. The fact that life is movement. Change is constant. And even when we feel stuck, we're not static. The water moves in the river, and so do we. Time passes and experiences change you. Cells get renewed, thoughts shift. So the second time you step in to this proverbial river, it's a different river. You are a different you. And that's what's meant by the self is not static. And to bring that thinking bang up to date and ground it for those who prefer science over philosophy, modern neuroscience shows that the brain is constantly rewiring. Our brains are processes, not objects, constantly changing and infinitely changeable. We are capable of instructing that change, of instructing that rewiring. And if you prefer hard facts and evidence to both philosophy and science, just look at your life, your own self. You're not the person who started university, entered your first job, contemplated children, and then became a parent. Neural pathways shift, and those experiences shape us, and yet we cling to identity as if it's fixed. Why? Because identity gives us coherence, it gives us safety, it gives us a story. But stories can fossilize. My God, we humans love a story. We are meaning makers. We survive not just through strength, but through narrative. Every culture does it. Every culture creates its own origin stories, identity roles, rites of passage, social labels. And those narratives, those stories, they help groups function. They do. They can be incredibly useful, but they can also trap individuals. In some cultures, you are your family's story. You are your village's history. You are your social class. You are your past behavior. And even though modern Western culture gives us more mobility, we still internalize roles really early. The good girl, the funny one, the responsible one, the one who can hold their drink, the anxious one, the mess. The mess. These are not truths. They're adaptations, intelligent responses to environments. And by that I mean that at some point in our life, often very early on, you learned how to survive, belong, or stay safe. And you did that brilliantly. You became the quiet one, the achiever, the funny one, the easygoing one, the one who could drink, the one who never made a fuss. That wasn't random. It was adaptive. Your nervous system scanned the environment and asked, what works here? What works? What keeps me safe? What keeps me accepted? What prevents rejection or conflict? And you adjusted accordingly. That adjustment was intelligent. I mean, it made sense in context. So if you grew up around volatility, maybe you became calm and contained. If you grew up around high expectations, maybe you became hyper-competent. And if you grew up in a culture where drinking signaled belonging, my God, you probably learned how to drink. These weren't flaws. There were solutions. The problem isn't that you adapted. The problem is that adaptation can outlive the environment that requires them. You might no longer need to shrink, to perform, to numb, to overfunction, or to prove. But the strategy keeps running because it once worked. So again, these identities were not mistakes. They were highly intelligent responses to the environments we were in. The question isn't, why did I become like this? The real question is, do I still need to be? And that's where the liberation really begins, not in blaming the past, but in recognizing that you were clever, you were adaptive, and you were resourceful. And now you get to choose again. What kept us safe then may not be serving us now. So no. We are not our past, but that is not to say that we aren't carrying beliefs, heavy beliefs that were formed in it. Beliefs like, I must not disappoint. I must not stand out. I must cope alone. I must not be too much. These beliefs shape behavior. They shape behavior. Sometimes alcohol becomes part of that coping mechanism. It softens social anxiety formed in adolescence. It numbs shame formed in childhood. It fits into an identity built in your 20s. It maintains belonging in your 30s. But because these beliefs were formed early, they feel like personality, but they're not personality. They are protective architecture. I'm going to say that again, hopefully the same way, because those beliefs which were formed early, they can feel like personality, but they're not. They're not personality. They are protective architecture. The work is not erasing the past. The work is asking, is this belief still true? Is this strategy still needed? And is this identity still mine? So one of the most hopeful truths around being human is this. We are adaptive. Every major life stage proves it. Again, think of who you were at 18, at 25, at 40. Different values, different fears, different desires, different coping mechanisms. You have reinvented yourself already. You're not the same person you were. The tragedy, in my humble opinion, isn't that we can't change, because we can. The tragedy is that we forget we already have and that we can do it again, time and time again, if we want to. And reinvention doesn't have to be dramatic, by the way. It can be incremental. It's the quiet decision to say, yeah, that might have been true of me once, but it doesn't have to be true of me now. So there's huge freedom in saying I am not my past, but there is responsibility too. Because if you're not fixed, if identity isn't permanent, and if beliefs can be examined, then you have agency. You can choose what to keep, what to question, what to release, what to build next. And that includes drinking habits, social identity, emotional patterns, self-talk. Again, not because the past was wrong, but because it just may no longer be necessary. We are not our past, but we may be living from beliefs formed in it. And the invitation isn't to reinvent yourself into someone new, it's to notice what you've been carrying and decide whether it still belongs. You're not the teenager who learned to cope a certain way. You're not the 20-something who felt they needed to drink to bond. You're not the younger version of yourself who needed that strategy. You are someone in motion. And that means change is not betrayal. It is evolution. Right, short and sweet, but hopefully powerful. And if you find these kind of solo episodes very thought-provoking, then sign up to my Substack publication, The Thirsty for More Mindset Lab. It's a kind of low-cost member space where you get this weekly drip feed, actually, of my thoughts and prompts that create the backdrop and fuel to rethink your drinking. Okay, and the link to the Thirsty for More Mindset Lab is in the show notes. So lovely. So I'm going to leave you with that. Lots to ponder. And I will be back next week with a guest episode of The Big Drink Rethink. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. It really helps other people find the show. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find all of my resources and become part of The Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebigdrinkrethink.com.